Beyond presents Spoilers for The Tragedy of Antony by Robert Garnier, translated by Mary Sidney, continuing our journey through the play with Act 3. Following are some introductory notes and a plain text recording of the dialogue, a plain text being the first cut edit of our full cast audio adaptation. It has all the text, but no SFX, no Foley, and it's the edit we use to hunt out textual errors, retakes or cuts. So it's not perfect, and we may change the take for the final thing. If you want to just enjoy our production, stop listening now and wait for the release. Or if you're listening in the future, look for the episodes further up in the podcast list. This is an exercise that some listeners won't enjoy. If it ain't for you, move on. If you're still listening, let's enter spoiler land.
Spoiler land.
Yeah, I know. Before I start, this is a play with themes of suicide throughout. And though there isn't usually anything explicitly portrayed, they do talk about it a lot, and it will get more bloody later on. It's also a play set during war, so death and destruction are part of the mix. So, Act 3, and the play's dramaturgy settles down a bit. Each act is a clear scene, followed by a chorus, rotating through the primary actors of this tragedy. Act 3, we return to Mark Antony. And this time, he's not monologuing, he's chatting with Lucilius, or Lucille. And we're in a similar zone to the last couple of scenes. Despair, death, and how to face it. As this is a neoclassical drama, we are here to debate this situation. And like Act 2, we have our hero figure being pushed towards, shall we say, the more rational position, perhaps, whilst our hero is some all for an inverted commas noble end. In this opening gambit, Antony introduces Lucilius to the audience. Lucille is the last man standing by Antony. Everyone else is gone.
Ah, Lucilius, sole comfort of my bitter case, the only trust, the only hope I have in last despair. Oh, is not this the day that death should me of life and love bereave? What wait I for that have no refuge left, but am sole remnant of my fortune left? Oh, leave me, fly me, none. No, not of them which of my greatness greatest good receives stands with my fall. They seem as now ashamed that heretofore they did me aught regard. They draw them back, showing they followed me not to partake my harms, but cozen me.
In this our world nothing is steadfast found. In vain he hopes, who here his hopes doth ground.
Lucilius is generally in agreement with Antony on this point. Them other people, they're rubbish. I'm the last man standing. The tone is less hysterical than in earlier scenes. It's more reflective here. Antony is going to start talking about the worst thing in this situation, and that is Cleopatra has gone over to Caesar, which we know isn't true. And to his credit, Lucilius doesn't believe it either.
Yet naught afflicts me. Nothing kills me so as that I so my Cleopatracy practice with Caesar, and to him transport my flame, her love more dear than life to me.
Believe it not. Too high a heart she bears, too princely thoughts.
Too wise a head she wears, too much inflamed with greatness, evermore gaping for our great empire's government.
So long time you her constant love have tried.
But still with me good fortune did abide.
Lucilius, who seems to be Team Cleo all the way, but he might just be trying to give Antony a kick up the arse, prods to see why Ant thinks she doesn't love him anymore.
Her changed love? What token makes you know?
Pelesium lost, and Actaeon overthrown, both by her fraud. My well-appointed fleet and trusty soldiers in my quarrel armed, whom she, false she, instead of my defence, came to persuade, to yield them to my foe. Such honour Thyre done, such welcome given, their long close talks I neither knew nor would, and treacherous wrong Alexis hath me done, witness too well her perjured love to me. But you, O gods, if any faith regard, with sharp revenge her faithless change reward.
The dole she made upon our overthrow, her realm given up for refuge to our men, her poor attire when she devoutly kept the solemn day of her nativity, against the cost and prodigal expense showed when she did your birthday celebrate. Do plain enough her heart unfeigned prove, equally touched, you loving as you love.
Mate, she loves you, mate. But Antony shifts the terms of reference by saying, it doesn't matter if she loves me. My love for her is a cureless wound.
Well, be her love to me false or true, once in my soul a cureless wound I feel. I love, nay, burn in fire of her love. Each day, each night, her image haunts my mind, herself my dreams. And still I tired am, and still am with burning pincers nipped. Extreme my harm, yet sweeter to my sense than boiling torch of jealous torment's fire. This grief, nay, rage, in me such stir doth keep and thorns me still, both when I wake and sleep. Take Caesar conquest, take my goods, take he Tonner to be lord of the earth alone, my sons, my life bent headlong to mishaps. No force, so not my Cleopatra take. Oh, so foolish I cannot her forget. Oh, though better were I banished her my thought. Like to the sick whose throat the fever's fire but hath vehemently with thirsty drought inflamed, drink still, albeit the drink he still desires be nothing else but fuel to his flame. He cannot rule himself. His health's respect yieldeth to his distempered stomach's heat.
Lucilius tries to push Antony away from this self-destructive turn. I mean, this isn't healthy, mate. And Antony knows this. He knows this, but he can't stop himself. Think on the man you used to be.
Leave of this love that thus renews your woe.
I do my best, but cannot do so.
Think how you have so brave a captain been, and now are by this vain affection fallen.
The ceaseless thought of my felicity plunges me more in this adversity. For nothing so a man in ill torments as who to him his good state represents. This makes my rack, my anguish, and my woe equal unto the hellish passions grow, when I to mind my happy puissance call, which erst I had by warlike conquest won, and that good fortune which me never left, which hard disaster now hath me bereft. With terror tremble all the world I made at my sole word, as rushes in the streams at water's will. I conquered Italy, I conquered Rome, that nation so redoubt. I bore meanwhile besieging mutina, true consuls' armies for my ruin brought. Bathed in their blood, by their deaths witness in my force and skill in matters martial.
It's an interesting bit of reminiscing. Antony, the glory years. And that warms the theme of this scene, the bond between Lucilius and Antony, and the questions of loyalty that that brings up.
To wreck thy uncle, unkind Caesar. I, with blood of enemies, the banks imbrued of stained Enipius, hindering his course, stopped with heaps of pilot carcasses. When Cassius and Brutus, ill-betide, marched against us, by us twice put to flight, but by my sole conduct. For all the time Caesar, heart-sick with fear and fever, lay. Who knows it not? And how, by everyone, fame of the fact was given to me alone. There sprang the love, the never-changing love, wherein my heart hath since to yours been bound. There was it, my Lucile, you Brutus saved, and for your Brutus Antony you found. Better my hap in gaining such a friend than in subduing such an enemy. Now former virtue dead doth me forsake. Fortune engulfs me in extreme distress. She turns from me her smiling countenance, casting on me mishap upon mishap. Left and betrayed of thousand friends once of my suit. But you, Lucile, are left, remaining to me steadfast as a tower in holy love, in spite of fortune's blasts. But if of any god my voice be heard, and be not vainly scattered in the heavens, such goodness shall not glory less be lost. But coming ages still thereof shall boast.
And from this theme of friendship to a lightness of touch regarding fortune, man should skate lightly over the things the world gives us. Again, this feels much more conversational than confrontational, as in Act Two with Cleopatra and her servants. So it's not just doing the same thing again, it is slightly mixing up the tone so that it doesn't all stay perhaps a bit one note.
Men in their friendship ever should be one, and never aught with fickle fortune shake, which still removes, nor will, nor knows the way, her rolling bowl in one sure state to stay. Wherefore we ought, as borrowed things receive the goods light, she lends us to pay again. Not hold them sure, nor on them build our hopes, as on such goods as cannot fail and fall. But think again. Nothing is durable virtue except our never failing host. So bearing sail when favouring winds do blow, as frowning tempests may us least dismay, when they on us do fall. Not over glad with good estate, nor over grieved with bad. Resist mishap.
Alas, it is too strong. Mishaps oft times are by some comfort borne, but these, ay me, whose weights oppress my heart, too heavy lie, no hope can them relieve. There rests no more but that with cruel blade for lingering death a hasty way be made.
And so, whatever Lucilius says to mindfulness the shit out of fortune, Antony is pulled back to the overbearing grief and the question again of death. Lucilius tries to push the notion that Caesar will remember the good old days and not kill Antony, and no one is buying that argument.
Caesar, as heir unto his father's state, so will his father's goodness imitate to you, Ward, whom he knows, allied in blood, allied in marriage, ruling equally the empire with him, and with him making war have purged the earth of Caesar's murderers. You into portions parted have the world, even like co-heirs their heritages part. And now with one accord, so many years in quiet peace, both have your charges ruled.
Blood and alliance nothing do prevail to cool the thirst of hot ambitious breasts. The son his father hardly can endure, brother his brother in one common realm. So fervent this desire to command, such jealousy it kindleth in our hearts. Sooner will men permit another should love her they love than wear the crown they wear. All laws it breaks, turns all things upside down. Amity, kindred, naught so holy is, but it defiles. A monarchy to gain, none cares which way, so he may it obtain.
Antony, to be fair, is bang on here. If you've set your eyes on the prize of absolute rule, then all bets of former loyalties are off. Caesar's not going to do that. Lucilius tries to argue that when you reach the top, you only fear the powerful and, well, look, Antony, you've had your wings clipped. So, you know, why not just go into retirement? I'm sure that'll be fine.
Suppose he monarch be, and that this world no more acknowledge sundry emperors that Rome him only fear, and that he join the east with west and both at once do rule. Why should he not permit you peaceably discharged of charge and empire's dignity, private to live reading philosophy in learned Greece, Spain, Asia, any land?
Never will he his empire think assured while in this world Mark Antony shall live. Sleepless suspicion, pale distrust, cold fear, always to prince's company do bear bread of reports. Reports which night and day perpetual guests from court go not away.
No, says Antony, I am too big to be allowed out of this one. Lucilius tries to quote some precedents.
He hath not slain your brother Lucius, nor shortened hath the age of Lepidus, albeit both into his hands were fallen, and he with wrath against them both inflamed. Yet one, as lord in quiet, resteth bear the greatest sway in great Iberia. The other, with his gentle prince, retains of highest priest the sacred dignity.
He fears not them. Their feeble force he knows.
He fears no vanquished, overfilled with woes.
Fortune may change again.
A downcast foe can hardly rise, which once is brought so low.
And Antony's right. If allowed to live, then he could stage a comeback, or at least as a figurehead for someone else, perhaps. And Caesar won't let that happen. He rams the point home that this is definitely it. Caesar won't let him rise again. He wouldn't face Antony in one-to-one combat. He's not going to do any sort of silly noble gestures. He's just going to extinguish his opponent.
All that I can is done. For last assay, when all means failed, I to entreaty fell. Oh, coward creature! Whence again repulsed of combat, I unto him proffer made. Though he in prime, and I by feeble age, mightily weakened both in force and skill. Yet could not he, his coward heart advanced, basely afraid to try so praiseful chance. This makes me plain, makes me myself accuse. Fortune in this her spiteful forth doth use gainst my grey hairs. In this unhappy I repine at heavens, in my haps pitiless. A man, a woman both in might and mind, in Mars his school, who never lesson learned, should me repulse, chase, overthrow, destroy me of such fame, bring me to so low an ebb. Alcides' blood, who from my infancy with happy prowess crowned, have my praise witnessed, thou Gaul unused to servile yoke. Thou valiant Spain, you fields of Thessaly, with millions of mourning cries bewailed, twice watered now with blood of Italy.
Lucilius prompts Antony to go over his many great deeds. It is a tricky section of the scene. Is Lucilius trying to gee him up with memories of his past glories. But Antony is more on a, I'm a soldier, I should have died in battle. I'll let this sequence run on a bit.
Witness may Afrique, and have conquered worlds all four quarters witnesses may be. For in what part of earth inhabited, hungry of praise, have you not ensigns spread?
Thou knowest rich Egypt, Egypt of my deeds fair and foul subject. Egypt, thou knowest how I behaved me fighting for thy king, when I regained him his rebellious realm, against his foes in battle showing force, and after fight in victory remorse. Yet if to bring my glory to the ground, fortune had made me overthrown by one of greater force, of better skill than I, one of those captains feared so of old, Camille, Marcellus, worthy Scipio, this late great Caesar, honour of our state, or that great Pompey, aged grown in arms, that after harvest of a world of men made in 100 battles, fights, assaults, my body thorough pierced with push of pike, had vomited my blood, in blood my life, in midst of millions fellows in my fall. The less her wrong, the less should be my woe, nor she should pain, nor I complain me so. No, no, whereas I should have died in arms, and vanquished oft, new armies should have armed, new battles given, and rather lost with me, all this whole world submitted unto me. A man who never saw enlaced pikes with bristled points against his stomach bent, who fears the field and hides him cowardly, dead at the very noise the soldiers make, his virtue, fraud, deceit, malicious guile, his arms, the arts that false Ulysses used, known at Medina, where the consuls both death-wounded were, and wounded by his men to get their army, war with it to make against his faith, against his country's soil, of Lepidus, which to his succours came, to honour whom he was by duty bound, the empire he usurped, corrupting first with baits and bribes the most part of his men, yet me hath overcome, and made his prey, and state of Rome with me hath overcome.
But going over all those possible glorious deaths that didn't happen in battle reminds Antony that, at Actium, he ran. He left a large bulk of his forces behind and he escaped. It's all over for him. Lucilius again points out that you can't win them all.
Oh, strange. One disordered act at Actium, the earth subdued, my glory hath obscured. For since, as one whom heaven's wrath attaints, with fury caught, and more than furious vexed with my evils, I never more had care my armies lost, or lost name to repair. I did no more resist.
All wars are fairs, but battles most daily have their success, now good, now ill. And though that fortune have great force and power in every worldly thing, rule all, do all, have all things fast unchained unto the circle of her turning wheel. Yet seems it more than any practice else, she doth frequent Bellona's bloody trade. And that her favour, wavering as the wind, her greatest power therein doth oftenest show. Whence grows, we daily see, who in their youth gat honour there, do lose it in their age, vanquished by some less warlike than themselves, whom yet a meaner man shall overthrow. Her use is not to lend us still her hand, but sometimes headlong back again to throw. When by her favour She hath us extolled unto the top of highest happiness.
And Antony gets to the conclusion, toyed with by Cleopatra in the previous scene. How did he get here? Was it fortune? Was it destiny? No. It was himself. It was his love and his indulgence in pleasure. You can really hear that Stoic clawing away at the dramaturgy here, can't you?
Well, what I curse within my grieved soul, lamenting day and night this senseless love, whereby my fair enticing foe entrapped my heedless reason, could no more escape. It was not fortune's ever-changing face. It was not destiny's changeless violence forged my mishap. Ah, alas, who doth not know they make, nor mar, nor anything can do? Fortune, which men so fear, adore, detest, is but a chance whose course unknown doth rest. Although oft times the cause is well perceived, but not the effect the same that was conceived. Pleasure, naught else, the plague of this our life which still a thousand plagues pursue. Alone hath me this strange disaster spun, fallen from a soldier to a chamberer, careless of virtue, careless of all praise. Nay, as the fatted swine in filthy mire, with glutted heart I wallowed in delights, all thoughts of honour trodden underfoot, so I me lost. For finding this sweet cup pleasing my taste, unwise I drank my fill. And through the sweetness of that poison's power, by steps I drew my former wits astray. I made my friends offended, me forsake. I halt my foes against myself to rise. I robbed my subjects, and for followers I saw myself beset with flatterers. Mine idle arms fair wrought with spiders' work, my scattered men without their ensign strayed. Caesar, meanwhile, who never would have dared to cope with me suddenly despised, took heart to fight, and hope for victory on one so gone, who glory had foregone.
And Lucilius doesn't disagree. Yep, it was the pleasure principle that got you.
Enchanting pleasure, Venus' sweet delights weaken our bodies, overcloud our sprites, trouble our reason. From our hearts outchase all holy virtues, lodging in their place. Like as the cunning fisher takes the fish by traitor bait whereby the hook is hid, so pleasure serves to vice instead of food, to bait our souls thereon to licorice. This poison deadly is alike to all, but on great kings doth greatest outrage work, taking the royal sceptres from their hands, thence forward to be by some stranger born, while that their people charged with heavy loads their flatterers pill and suck their marrow dry, not ruled but left to great men as a prey, while this fond prince himself in pleasures drowns, who hears naught, sees naught, doth naught of a king, seeming himself against himself conspired. Then equal justice wandereth banished, and in her seat sits greedy tyranny. Confused disorder troubleth all estates, crimes without fear, and outrages are done. Then mutinous rebellion shows her face, now hid with this and now with that pretense, provoking enemies which on each side enter at ease and make them lords of all. The hurtful works of pleasure here behold.
The wolf is not so hurtful to the fold. Frost to the grapes, to ripened fruits the rain, as pleasure is to princes full of pain.
There needs no proof, but by the Assyrian king on whom that monster woeful rack did bring.
There needs no proof, but by unhappy I who lost my empire on a life thereby.
So, after examples of pleasure and what it does to one, Lucilius keeps up the theme. It's getting like, Lucilius, should you be doing this I told you so thing to Antony in this state at this point? I mean, really?
Yet hath this ill so much the greater force, as scarcely any do against it stand. No, not the demigods the old world knew who all subdued, could pleasure's power subdue. Great Hercules, Hercules once that was wonder of earth and heaven, matchless in might, who Antaeus, Lycus, Geryon overcame, who drew from hell the triple-headed dog, who Hydra killed, vanquished Achilles, who heaven's weight on his strong shoulders bore. Did he not under pleasure's burden bow? Did he not captive to this passion yield, when by his captive so he was inflamed? And now yourself in Cleopatra burn, slept in her lap, her bosom kissed and kissed, with base unseemly service bought her love, spinning at distaff, and with sinewy hand winding on spindle's thread in maid's attire, his conquering club at rest on wall did hang, his bow unstringed he bent not as he used. Upon his shafts the weaving spiders spun, and his hard cloak the fretting moths did pierce. The monsters free and fearless, all the time throughout the world the people did torment, and more increasing day by day, scorned his weak heart become a mistress play.
In only this like Hercules am I. In this I prove me of his lineage right. In this himself, his deeds I show in this. In this, naught else, my ancestor he is.
So Antony, only accepting he's like Hercules in the worst possible way, returns to the theme of death. How to have a noble death, which draws his friend Lucille to tears.
But go we, die I must, and with brave end conclusion make of all foregoing harms. Die I must. I must a noble death, a glorious death unto my succour call. I must deface the shame of time abused. I must adorn the wanton loves I used with some courageous act, that my last day by mine own hand my spots may wash away. Come, dear Lucilius, alas, why weep you thus? This mortal lot is common to us all. We must all die. Each doth in homage owe unto that god that shared the realms below. Oh, sigh no more. Alas, appease your woes, for by your grief my grief more eager grows.
And exit Antony and Lucilius in mutual sad face, leaving us with the chorus for Act 3. Now, as mentioned previously, for our recording, I decided to go for a choric effect of multiple voices. This may still turn out to be a terrible idea, but it's what we've got on tape. And today's theme for the chorus is death and pain and reiteration of the content warning here, unrelenting appeals to suicide. This chorus is not one to invite to parties.
Alas, with what tormenting fire us martyreth this blind desire to stay our life from flying. How ceaselessly our minds doth rack, how heavy lies upon our back this dastard fear of dying. Death rather healthful succour gives, death rather all mishaps relieves that life upon us throweth, and ever to us death unclose the door whereby from cureless woes our weary soul outgoeth. What goddess else more mild than she to bury all our pain can be? What remedy more pleasing our pained hearts when dolour stings and nothing rest or respite brings? What help have we more easing?
Is there any way out of this pain and suffering beyond death? Perhaps hope.
Hope which to us doth comfort give and doth our fainting hearts revive hath not such force in anguish, for promising a vain relief she oft us fails in midst of grief and helpless lets us languish. But death, who call on her at need, doth never with vain semblance feed, but when them sorrow paineth, so rids their souls of all distress, whose heavy weight did them oppress, that not one grief remaineth. Who fearless and with courage bold can Acheron's black face behold, which muddy water beareth, and crossing over in the way, is not amazed at Peric grey, old rusty Charon weareth? Who void of dread can look upon the dreadful shades that roam alone on banks where sound no voices, whom with her firebrands and her snakes no whit afraid Alecto makes, nor triple barking noises? Who freely can himself dispose of that last hour which all must close and leave this life at pleasure? This noble freedom more esteems and in his heart more precious deems than crown and kingly treasure.
It's getting a bit toxic internet chat room here, isn't it? Have you considered how great suicide is? I mean, fuck me. Give it a rest. But because this is neoclassical tragedy, we will use classical allusions to make the concept seem cool.
The waves which Boreas blasts turmoil and calls with foaming fury boil make not his heart to tremble, nor brutish broil when with strong head a rebel people madly led against their lords assemble, nor fearful face of tyrant wood who breathes but threats and drinks but blood. No, nor the hand which thunder, the hand of Jove which thunder bears and ribs of rock in sunder tears, tears mountains' sides in sunder, nor bloody Mars's butchering hands, whose lightnings desert lay the lands, whom dusty clouds do cover, from off whose armour sunbeams fly, and under them may quaking lie the plains whereon they hover. Nor yet the cruel murthering blade, warm in the moisty bowels made, of people pell-mell dying, in some great city put to sack, by savage tyrant brought to rack, at his cold mercy lying. How abject him, how base think I, who wanting courage cannot die, when need him thereto calleth, from whom the dagger drawn to kill, the cureless griefs that vex him still, for fear and faintless falleth.
It's getting very Senecan round here. He'd have loved moisty bowels. And again, with the appeal to how noble suicide is, we circle round to Antony again, pointing out that he is pretty much doomed, and maybe the sword is the best way out.
O Antony, with thy dear mate, both in misfortunes fortunate, whose thoughts to death aspiring, shall you protect from victor's rage, who on each side doth you encage, to triumph much desiring. That Caesar may you not offend, naught else but death can you defend, which his weak force derideth, And all in this round earth contained, powerless on them whom once enchained, Avernus prison hideth, where great Semetic's ghost doth rest, not with infernal pain possessed, but in sweet fields detained, and old Amasis' soul likewise, and all our famous Ptolemies, that whilom on us reigned.
And with that call out to past rulers of Egypt, so close the chorus. Don't worry, we won't be meeting this lot again. It's a very different chorus in Act 4. Now, I'm not one to promote suicide, but I will put in a dramatic defence for the excesses of the chorus here and actually for what the player's doing generally. Antony does have basically a choice between death at his own hand or another's. And the chorus is articulating a viewpoint that was very prevalent in Rome and in classical culture, and was certainly discussed at great length in the early modern period, though, of course, suicide is not something a Christian universe will go for, because, you know, mortal sin and all that. And one of the options here, and there are options about this particular chorus, because the chorus is not homogenous throughout the whole play. It changes, the next chorus is a very different one, and they're doing slightly different things in different places. And I wonder whether this is actually the same chorus as we encountered earlier in the play at all, whether it's that each act almost has its own different set of choruses. And so if in staging this play you want to leave Antony on stage at the end of the act while the chorus are speaking, it sets up that they're pretty much saying what he is about to do. I mean, spoilers, we're well into spoiler land here. If you don't want to know what happened after the Battle of Actium, look away now. Antony's going to kill himself very shortly, and he's going to try and kill himself very, very badly. And there is real dramatic potential to play these as less real people, real choruses, figures from Egypt, or maybe more from Antony's entourage, and that these are more voices and arguments in Antony's head. I mean, that could come off as a bit cheesy, I know, but to have almost a physical theatre approach, with the chorus and Antony on stage, movement, words, that cacophony of feedback loop of such dark thoughts when you're in a dark place, I think that could actually be very effective. And say, with lots of content warnings before anyone has comes to engage with this text, is quite important. But anyway, that is it from this spoiler episode. In a moment, there will be a plain text recording of the scenes featured. There are also a host, far too many, frankly, of exploring sessions on the podcast and on our YouTube channel, and links to material for the play as well in the show description. But till then, I've been your host, Robert Crichton, and I leave you with the plain text edit of The Tragedy of Antony, Act 3, with Hayden McCabe as Mark Antony, and Rob Meissen as Lucilius. Robert Crichton and Gillian Horgan are voices in the chorus. Enjoy.
Ah, Lucilius, sole comfort of my bitter case, the only trust, the only hope I have in last despair. Oh, is not this the day that death should me of life and love bereave? What wait I for that have no refuge left, but am sole remnant of my fortune left? Oh, leave me, fly me, none. No, not of them which of my greatness greatest good receives stands with my fall. They seem as now ashamed that heretofore they did me aught regard. They draw them back, showing they followed me not to partake my harms, but cozen me.
In this our world nothing is steadfast found. In vain he hopes, who here his hopes doth ground.
Yet naught afflicts me, nothing kills me so, as that I so my Cleopatra see practice with Caesar, and to him transport my flame, her love more dear than life to me.
Believe it not. Too high a heart she bears, too princely thoughts.
Too wise a head she wears, too much inflamed with greatness, evermore gaping for our great empire's government.
So long time you her constant love have tried.
But still with me good fortune did abide.
Her changed love? What token makes you know?
Pelusium lost, and Actaeon overthrown, both by her fraud. My well-appointed fleet and trusty soldiers in my quarrel armed, whom she, false she, instead of my defence, came to persuade, to yield them to my foe. Such honour Thyre done, such welcome given, their long close talks I neither knew nor would, and treacherous wrong Alexis hath me done, witness too well her perjured love to me. But you, O gods, if any faith regard, with sharp revenge her faithless change reward.
The dole she made upon our overthrow, her realm given up for refuge to our men, her poor attire when she devoutly kept the solemn day of her nativity, against the cost and prodigal expense showed when she did your birthday celebrate. Do plain enough her heart unfeigned prove, equally touched, you loving as you love.
Well, be her love to me false or true, once in my soul a cureless wound I feel. I love, nay, burn in fire of her love. Each day, each night her image haunts my mind, herself my dreams. And still I tired am, and still am with burning pincers nipped. Extreme my harm, yet sweeter to my sense than boiling torch of jealous torment's fire. This grief, nay, rage, in me such stir doth keep and thorns me still, both when I wake and sleep. Take Caesar conquest, take my goods, take he Tonner to be lord of the earth alone. My sons, my life bent headlong to mishaps. No force, so not my Cleopatra take. Oh, so foolish I cannot her forget. Oh, though better were I banished her my thought. Like to the sick whose throat the fever's fire breath hath vehemently with thirsty drought inflamed. Drink still, albeit the drink he still desires be nothing else but fuel to his flame. He cannot rule himself. His health's respect yieldeth to his distempered stomach's heat.
Leave of this love that thus renews your woe.
I do my best, but oh, cannot do so.
Think how you have so brave a captain been, and now are by this vain affection fallen.
The ceaseless thought of my felicity plunges me more in this adversity. For nothing so a man in ill torments as who to him his good state represents. This makes my rack, my anguish and my woe equal unto the hellish passions grow, when I to mind my happy puissance call, which erst I had by warlike conquest won, and that good fortune which me never left, which hard disaster now hath me bereft. With terror tremble all the world I made at my sole word, as rushes in the streams at water's will. I conquered Italy, I conquered Rome, that nation so redoubt. I bore meanwhile besieging mutina, two consuls' armies for my ruin brought. Bathed in their blood, by their deaths witness in my force and skill in matters martial. To wreck thy uncle, unkind Caesar, I with blood of enemies the banks imbrued of stained Enipius, hindering his course, stopped with heaps of piled carcasses. When Cassius and Brutus ill betide marched against us, by us twice put to flight, but by my sole conduct. For all the time Caesar heart sick with fear and fever lay. Who knows it not? And how, by everyone, fame of the fact was given to me alone. There sprang the love, the never-changing love, wherein my heart hath since to yours been bound. There was it, my Lucille, you Brutus saved, and for your Brutus Antony you found. Better my hap in gaining such a friend than in subduing such an enemy. Now former virtue dead doth me forsake. Fortune engulfs me in extreme distress. She turns from me her smiling countenance, casting on me mishap upon mishap. Left and betrayed of thousand friends once of my suit. But you, Lucille, are left, remaining to me steadfast as a tower in holy love, in spite of fortune's blasts. But if of any god my voice be heard, and be not vainly scattered in the heavens, such goodness shall not glory less be lost, but coming ages still thereof shall boast.
Men in their friendship ever should be one, and never aught with fickle fortune shake, which still removes, nor will, nor knows the way, her rolling bowl in one sure state to stay. Wherefore we ought, as borrowed things receive the goods light, she lends us to pay again. Not hold them sure, nor on them build our hopes, as on such goods as cannot fail and fall. But think again. Nothing is durable, virtue except our never-failing host. So bearing sail when favouring winds do blow, as frowning tempests may us least dismay, when they on us do fall. Not over-glad with good estate, nor over-grieved with bad. Resist mishap.
Alas, it is too strong. Mishaps oft-times are by some comfort borne. But these, ay me, whose weights oppress my heart, too heavy lie, no hope can them relieve. There rest no more but that with cruel blade for lingering death a hasty way be made.
Caesar, as heir unto his father's state, so will his father's goodness imitate to you, ward, whom he knows, allied in blood, allied in marriage, ruling equally the empire with him, and with him making war have purged the earth of Caesar's murderers. You into portions parted have the world, even like co-heirs their heritages part. And now with one accord, so many years in quiet peace, both have your charges ruled.
Blood and alliance nothing do prevail to cool the thirst of hot ambitious breasts. The son his father hardly can endure, brother his brother in one common realm. So fervent this desire to command, such jealousy it kindleth in our hearts. Sooner will men permit another should love her they love than wear the crown they wear. All laws it breaks, turns all things upside down. Amity, kindred, naught so holy is, but it defiles. A monarchy to gain, none cares which way, so he may it obtain.
Suppose he monarch be, and that this world no more acknowledge sundry emperors, that Rome him only fear, and that he join the east with west, and both at once do rule. Why should he not permit you peaceably discharged of charge and empire's dignity, private to live, reading philosophy in learned Greece, Spain, Asia, any land?
Never will he his empire think assured while in this world Mark Antony shall live. Sleepless suspicion, pale distrust, cold fear, always to princes' company do bear bread of reports. reports which night and day perpetual guests from court go not away.
He hath not slain your brother Lucius, nor shortened hath the age of Lepidus, albeit both into his hands were fallen, and he with wrath against them both inflamed. Yet one, as lord in quiet, resteth bear the greatest sway in great Iberia. The other, with his gentle prince, retains of highest priest the sacred dignity.
He fears not them. Their feeble force he knows.
He fears no vanquished, overfilled with woes.
Fortune may change again.
A downcast foe can hardly rise, which once is brought so low.
All that I can is done. For last assay, when all means failed, I to entreaty fell. Ah, oh, coward creature! Whence again repulsed of combat, I unto him proffer made. Though he in prime, and I by feeble age, mightily weakened both in force and skill. Yet could not he, his coward heart advanced, basely afraid to try so praiseful chance. This makes me plain, makes me myself accuse. Fortune in this her spiteful forth doth use gainst my grey hairs. In this unhappy I repine at heavens, in my haps pitiless. A man, a woman both in might and mind, in Mars his school, who never lesson learned, should me repulse, chase, overthrow, destroy me of such fame, bring me to so low an ebb. Alcides' blood, who from my infancy with happy prowess crowned, have my praise witnessed, thou Gaul unused to servile yoke. Thou valiant Spain, you fields of Thessaly, with millions of mourning cries bewailed, twice watered now with blood of Italy.
Witness may Afrique, and of conquered worlds all four quarters witnesses may be. For in what part of earth inhabited, hungry of praise, have you not ensigns spread?
Thou knowest rich Egypt, Egypt of my deeds fair and foul subject. Egypt, ah! Thou know'st how I behaved me fighting for thy king, when I regained him his rebellious realm, against his foes in battle showing force, and after fight in victory remorse. Yet if to bring my glory to the ground, fortune had made me overthrown by one of greater force, of better skill than I, one of those captains feared so of old, Camille, Marcellus, worthy Scipio, this late great Caesar, honour of our state, or that great Pompey, aged grown in arms, that after harvest of a world of men made in 100 battles, fights, assaults, my body thorough pierced with push of pike, had vomited my blood, in blood my life, in midst of millions fellows in my fall. The less her wrong, the less should be my woe, nor she should pain, nor I complain me so. No. No, whereas I should have died in arms, and vanquished oft, new armies should have armed, new battles given, and rather lost with me, all this whole world submitted unto me. A man who never saw enlaced pikes with bristled points against his stomach bent, who fears the field and hides him cowardly, dead at the very noise the soldiers make, his virtue, fraud, deceit, malicious guile, his arms, the arts that false Ulysses used, known at Modena, where the consuls both death-wounded were, and wounded by his men to get their army, war with it to make against his faith, against his country's soil, of Lepidus, which to his succours came, to honour whom he was by duty bound, the empire he usurped, corrupting first with baits and bribes the most part of his men, yet me hath overcome, and made his prey and state of Rome with me hath overcome. Ah, strange! One disordered act at Actium, the earth subdued, my glory hath obscured. For since, as one whom heaven's wrath attaints with fury caught, and more than furious vexed with my evils, I never more had care my armies lost, or lost name to repair. I did no more resist.
All wars are fairs, but battles most daily have their success, now good, now ill. And though that fortune have great force and power in every worldly thing, rule all, do all, have all things fast unchained unto the circle of her turning wheel. Yet seems it more than any practice else, she doth frequent Bellona's bloody trade. And that her favour, wavering as the wind, her greatest power therein doth oftenest show. Whence grows, we daily see, who in their youth gat honour there, do lose it in their age, vanquished by some less warlike than themselves, whom yet a meaner man shall overthrow. Her use is not to lend us still her hand, but sometimes headlong back again to throw. When by her favour she hath us extolled unto the top of highest happiness.
Well, ought I curse within my grieved soul, lamenting day and night this senseless love, whereby my fair enticing foe entrapped my heedless reason, could no more escape. It was not fortune's ever-changing face. It was not destiny's changeless violence forged my mishap. Oh, alas, who doth not know they make, nor mar, nor anything can do? Fortune, which men so fear, adore, detest, is but a chance whose course unknown doth rest. Although oft times the cause is well perceived, but not the effect the same that was conceived. Pleasure, naught else, the plague of this our life which still a thousand plagues pursue, alone hath me this strange disaster spun, fallen from a soldier to a chamberer, careless of virtue, careless of all praise. Nay, as the fatted swine in filthy mire, with glutted heart I wallowed in delights, all thoughts of honour trodden underfoot, so I me lost. For finding this sweet cup pleasing my taste, unwise I drank my fill. And through the sweetness of that poison's power, by steps I drew my former wits astray. I made my friends offended, me forsake. I halt my foes against myself to rise. I robbed my subjects, and for followers I saw myself beset with flatterers. Mine idle arms fair wrought with spiders' work, my scattered men without their ensign strayed. Caesar, meanwhile, who never would have dared to cope with me, me suddenly despised, took heart to fight, and hope for victory on one so gone, who glory had forgone.
Enchanting pleasure, Venus' sweet delights, weaken our bodies, overcloud our sprites, trouble our reason. From our hearts outchase all holy virtues, lodging in their place. Like as the cunning fisher takes the fish by traitor bait whereby the hook is hid, so pleasure serves to vice instead of food, to bait our souls thereon to licorice. This poison deadly is alike to all, but on great kings doth greatest outrage work, taking the royal sceptres from their hands, thence forward to be by some stranger born. while that their people charged with heavy loads, their flatterers pill and suck their marrow dry, not ruled, but left to great men as a prey, while this fond prince himself in pleasures drowns, who hears naught, sees naught, doth naught of a king, seeming himself against himself conspired. Then equal justice wandereth banished, and in her seat sits greedy tyranny. Confused disorder troubleth all estates, crimes without fear, and outrages are done. Then mutinous rebellion shows her face, now hid with this, and now with that pretense, provoking enemies which on each side enter at ease and make them lords of all. The hurtful works of pleasure here behold.
The wolf is not so hurtful to the fold, frost to the grapes, to ripened fruits the rain, as pleasure is to princes full of pain.
There needs no proof but by the Assyrian king on whom that monster woeful rack did bring.
There needs no proof but by unhappy I who lost my empire on a life thereby.
Yet hath this ill so much the greater force as scarcely any do against it stand. No, not the demigods the old world knew who all subdued. Could pleasure's power subdue? Great Hercules, Hercules once that was wonder of earth and heaven, matchless in might, who Antaeus, Lycus, Geryon overcame, who drew from hell the triple-headed dog, who Hydra killed, vanquished Achilles, who heaven's weight on his strong shoulders bore. Did he not under pleasure's burden bow? Did he not captive to this passion yield, when by his captive so he was inflamed? And now yourself in Cleopatra burn, slept in her lap, her bosom kissed and kissed, with base unseemly service bought her love, spinning at distaff, and with sinewy hand winding on spindle's thread in maid's attire, his conquering club at rest on wall did hang, his bow unstringed he bent not as he used. Upon his shafts the weaving spiders spun, and his hard cloak the fretting moths did pierce. The monsters free and fearless, all the time throughout the world the people did torment, and more increasing day by day, scorned his weak heart, become a mistress play.
In only this like Hercules am I. In this I prove me of his lineage right. In this himself, his deeds I show in this. In this, naught else, my ancestor he is. But go we. Die I must, and with brave end conclusion make of all foregoing harms. Die I must. I must a noble death, a glorious death unto my succour call. I must deface the shame of time abused. I must adorn the wanton loves I used with some courageous act, that my last day by mine own hand my spots may wash away. Come, dear Lucilius, alas, why weep you thus? This mortal lot is common to us all. We must all die. Each doth in homage owe unto that god that shared the realms below. Oh, sigh no more. Alas, appease your woes, for by your grief my grief more eager grows.
Alas, With what tormenting fire us martyreth this blind desire to stay our life from flying? How ceaselessly our minds doth rack, how heavy lies upon our back this dastard fear of dying. Death rather healthful succour gives, death rather all mishaps relieves that life upon us throweth, and ever to us death unclose the door whereby from cureless woes our weary soul outgoeth. What goddess else more mild than she to bury all our pain can be? What remedy more pleasing our pained hearts when dolour stings and nothing rest or respite brings? What help have we more easing? Hope which to us doth comfort give and doth our fainting hearts revive hath not such force in anguish, for promising a vain relief she oft us fails in midst of grief and helpless lets us languish. But death, who call on her at need, doth never with vain semblant feed, but when them sorrow paineth, so rids their souls of all distress, whose heavy weight did them oppress, that not one grief remaineth. Who fearless and with courage bold can Acheron's black face behold, which muddy water beareth, and crossing over in the way, is not amazed at Peric grey old rusty Charon weareth? Who void of dread can look upon the dreadful shades that roam alone on banks where sound no voices, whom with her firebrands and her snakes no whit afraid Alecto makes, nor triple barking noises? Who freely can himself dispose of that last hour which all must close and leave this life at pleasure, this noble freedom more esteems, and in his heart more precious deems than crown and kingly treasure? The waves which Boreas blasts turmoil and calls with foaming fury boil make not his heart to tremble, nor brutish broil when with strong head a rebel people madly led against their lords assemble, nor fearful face of tyrant wood who breathes but threats and drinks but blood, no, nor the hand which thunder, the hand of Jove which thunder bears and ribs of rock in sunder tears mountains' sides in sunder, nor bloody Mars's butchering hands whose lightning's desert lay the lands whom dusty clouds do cover, from off whose armour sunbeams fly, and under them may quaking lie the plains whereon they hover. Nor yet the cruel murthering blade, warm in the moisty bowels made of people pell-mell dying, in some great city put to sack, by savage tyrant brought to rack, at his cold mercy lying. How abject him, how base think I, who wanting courage cannot die, when need him thereto calleth, from whom the dagger drawn to kill, the cureless griefs that vex him still, for fear and faintless falleth. O Antony, with thy dear mate, both in misfortunes fortunate, whose thoughts to death aspiring, shall you protect from victor's rage, who on each side doth you encage, to triumph much desiring? That Caesar may you not offend, nought else but death can you defend, which his weak force derideth, and all in this round earth contained, powerless on them whom once enchained Avernus' prison hideth. Where great Semetic's ghost doth rest, not with infernal pain possessed, but in sweet fields detained, and old Amasis' soul likewise, and all our famous Ptolemies, that whilom on us reigned.
In the plain text edit of The Tragedy of Antony by Robert Garnier, translated by Mary Sidney, Haydon McCabe was Mark Antony, Rob Meissen, Lucilius, with Robert Crichton and Gillian Horgan as voices in the chorus. Spoilers is hosted and produced by Robert Crichton for the Beyond podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, why not buy us a coffee on ko-fi.com? Or you can become a patron and get early access and bonus material. Our patrons get to choose the plays we work on next. Go to www.patreon.com/beyondshakespeare. Links in the show description. Goodbye.